Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Means that the number one pick in the 2021 NBA draft goes to the Detroit Pistons.
Who's got the number one pick in this year's draft? Who's got the number one pick in this year's draft?
Basketball!
Select Isaiah Stewart.
The Detroit Pistons select Killian Hayes.
Sadiq, that was absolutely sensational.
I don't know what went into that process. I met the criteria to be selected, but I wasn't.
From long range. Oh! Yes! Yes!
Detroit basketball!
Pistons fans, welcome back to another edition of the Palace of Pistons podcast, part of the Believe Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mike Anguilano, and joining me as always is Aaron Johnson and Jasper Apollonia. Fellas, how are we doing this fine evening?
Doing good as always. We got some good topics to get into. A lot of stuff coming up with the trade deadline. NBA All-Star break coming up right after that as well. So we're just a couple weeks out of the trade deadline. There's always been a lot of talk around Jeremy Grant. We're going to talk about that. What's going on with him? What's going on with the Pistons in general at the trade deadline? So excited to get into it. And good for the probably the first time in a long time that we got all three of us here this week again. I mean, we had it last week, and that was right after at least a couple week hiatus. 2 weeks in a row, we've all been able to make it. That's what I call success. I'm ready to get into it.
That's right, baby. We're going back to back like the Bad Boys. That's what we're doing this week. It's Mike, as you can already tell, I've had my iced coffee. I've got my energy levels right for this podcast. Like you said, Aaron, we got a couple of great topics to get into today, and it's kind of funny that, you know, the thing that we're actually talking about mostly is not going to be the games, since the Pistons have actually put together a good stretch of competitive basketball. I know they've gotten blown out in a few games in between those wins, but even in this last week, you know, a couple of competitive losses to both the Jazz and the Denver Nuggets, who they play tonight right after we record this podcast. So, you know, the Pistons have been actually watchable. It's been a really nice development considering how we were struggling through the first few months of the season, but it's nice to have everybody here, and I'm ready to get into things, guys.
Yes, a little bit of All-Star Game talk as well. As Aaron mentioned, the All-Star Game, of course, 15 minutes down the street from me when it does happen, so that will be pretty fun. I'm going to try to see what I can do to get in there or near there for the festivities on the weekend. But first off, we have our ad read. And that, of course, is BetOnline, as it has been for several months. A quality partner have been with us for quite a while. And BetOnline is back and better than ever with a new web interface for the start of the NFL playoffs, basketball season, with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline is your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. So head on over to the new updated desktop or mobile site, sign up today, and receive your 50% welcome bonus for your first deposit using the promo code BLEAV50. That's BLEAV50 to get your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit at BetOnline. From basketball, football, NHL, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2022 season. And BetOnline is, of course, the fastest and easiest way to bet all of your favorite sports. Bet online, where the game starts. Get the ad read going quickly here, and we could hit our first topic, which of course is Jeremy Grant. Bleacher Report had reported earlier today that John Collins is a potential swap partner with Jeremy Grant. The salary matches pretty nicely. There's been a lot of talk with Jeremy Grant. Won't be the last time we talk about him probably either. But the main point is, you know, he's been a very hot commodity on the trade market. And Aaron and I both have touched on the cases for trading him and not trading him. I would be surprised personally. I would be surprised if he's still on the team. Seems more and more of a possibility that he hangs with the team past the deadline and they try to move him in the summer. There's a lot of ins and outs with regards to a Grant trade. So let's work off of the Bleacher Report. I believe it was Jake Fisher this morning posted about a potential John Collins swap and how the Bulls are really trying to not include Patrick Williams in any sort of trade, but certainly the Pistons would ask for him if there was a trade for Jeremy Grant. So Aaron, any thoughts on those first two things for here this morning?
Yeah, I mean, I think first things first, again, I'm still in the boat that I don't think the Pistons should actively be pursuing Jeremy Grant trades. That being said, if you can get a guy like John Collins, you know, I'm not 100% sure why Atlanta feels it's John Collins that has to be the guy to go there. I mean, outside of Trae Young, no one on that team is untouchable, but he is just, he's 24 years old. He's having another very productive season. He's locked up now long-term. This is a guy that if the Pistons can get is an ideal fit next to Cade Cunningham. And if people are, as it seems as they are, so concerned about Cade Cunningham getting younger guys around him and Jeremy Grant's age, you know, they're going to be paying Jeremy Grant until he's 32 or 33, whatever. If you really feel that that's a big enough issue to where a couple year, 2-3 year difference is a big enough deal to you to make a trade, John Collins is a guy that at 24 is having another very productive season. He's averaging 17 points, 8 rebounds a game. He's shooting almost 43% from the 3-point line. That's a career high in over 3 attempts per game. He's an athletic guy. He can run the pick and roll. He can finish at the rim. This is a guy that would be ideal alongside Cade Cunningham. And that's always been one of my biggest concern is how you build this roster around Cade Cunningham. I see, you know, Jeremy Grant being a guy that's easier to fit around Cade Cunningham than some of these other players that are maybe more of a gamble to that. Who knows what they're going to end up being. You're trading for either a draft pick or a guy that's unproven. John Collins is a proven NBA player, but still very, very young. If the Pistons were to trade Jeremy Grant, we talked about it a little bit earlier in, you know, our Palace of Pistons chat, but John Collins or DeAndre Hunter are the two guys that really stand out to me the most. The Hawks just seem like the right team to make a deal with. If the Pistons are, you know, decide they do want to deal Grant and the Hawks are desperate enough that they do want to make a move, I think Collins is definitely the first guy that they should be trying to get. He helps them so much offensively. He's a little bit younger than Jeremy Grant. And I just think the fit in general would be really, really good for this team. My only concern is I don't think it solves Detroit's need for a 5 necessarily. He can do it in spurts. I don't know if it's going to be the right situation for him to do that long-term full-time, but it would be a major boost for Detroit in general, and I'd be really intrigued to see what he could do. I think the fit alongside Cunningham is spectacular, but I'm still not 100% locked in on the idea that the Pistons should trade Grant, and I'm still, as I said last week, if I was predicting, I still think the Pistons are going to Jeremy Grant's going to still be a Piston at the end of the trade deadline.
Well, there's a lot of questions surrounding that right now, because like you said, like you're seeing these reports from Jake Fisher has been very vocal about saying all these teams are reaching out. They're trying to get Jeremy Grant. And I've seen a lot of pushback against him specifically in those reports from people that do have connections to the Pistons front office. So that's kind of a strange situation right there. I know the guy got a lot of things right in free agency this last offseason when a lot of people were doubting him then as well. So who really knows there? I don't really understand why Atlanta would make that trade. To me, that doesn't make Atlanta an appreciably better team in the short term or the long term. I like Jeremy Grant a lot. I think he is, especially if he's taking a more backseat role in terms of the offensive load, I think that that is great. I think he can be a very efficient, very, very useful player that can defend essentially in the playoffs, like, you know, reasonably, he can defend 1 through 5, reasonably. The issue with John Collins, I guess, as Atlanta would see it, is that he is not a good defensive player. And like you said, Aaron, there's that question about his fit. But for me, overall, I look at that and I say, if Atlanta is going to trade John Collins for Jeremy Grant, by all means, do it immediately. Don't ask any questions, because you're getting younger, you're getting more athletic, you're getting more efficient on the offensive end. Yes, there's questions about the fit. Yes, there's questions about the defense. But I don't really care, because this is a team that lacks high-end talent, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And John Collins is unquestionably that. He is highly talented offensively. He is still young. He is a hyper athlete. He is exactly what the kind of player that you need. Maybe we can talk a little bit about, you know, the Pistons' potential draft prospect if they do land in the top three again. That Chet, Jabari Smith, Paolo Banchero, who's the right guy there? Look, if you land in the top three and you have John Collins, I don't really care. You can draft any of those guys and put them next to him. You're immediately looking at a front court that's going to be insanely athletic, insanely skilled. And if you do decide to draft somebody like Chet Holmgren, also going to potentially be really good defensively. So if this is really an offer that's on the table, the Pistons have to take it. I don't really see why Atlanta would do it, though. So I do have questions about that. Aaron, I am, I think, coming around to where you have been saying. I think that there is actually kind of a chance that Jeremy Grant is still on this team by the end of the trade deadline, because the more I look at it, who are the teams that are going to make that trade and give you exactly what you want right now in terms of the return for Jeremy Grant? I don't really see it. It's kind of stuff like, maybe we can get Pat Williams, maybe we can get John Collins, and that to me is sounding less and less likely. So we'll see. Absolutely, it'd be a no-brainer, but I have a lot of questions regarding those reports.
Yeah, I remember writing about John Collins, or at least looking at his stats a little bit ago, and playing him as a five is not a thing that I think the Pistons can do. They still need a center. It solves the big man problem a little bit, gives him, you know, a high-flying, more athletic four that is a nice pick-and-roll partner for Cade Cunningham. I don't think it solves the center problem at all. You still need to go get a center. You still need to go get a rim protector, preferably somebody who is not going to get absolutely toasted on a switch. And John Collins is not a very good defender. He is young and athletic and plays the four well. And, you know, I used to think initially that it was a slam dunk trade. The Pistons obviously get much better, but do they get demonstrably better, you know, in the long run? Maybe a little bit. Certainly the timeline matches up a lot better between Collins and Grant. Collins is 24 years old. So,
but he's also better. He's just a better player than Jeremy Grant is.
Sure, like, sure.
And especially on this roster. And I know we can talk about, yeah, okay, they still need to figure out the center position. Yeah, but like, the fact of the matter is, they have so many issues they need to figure out with this roster, no matter who comes in. Like, unless they're getting Joel Embiid, they're still going to have issues at that center position coming into the draft. And I think that they're in a position, you know, where if they can draft Chet, or if they can draft Paolo, and you do have John Collins there, who cares? Just get the talent on the roster and figure the rest out. Because at this point, after watching this organization just struggle to acquire and keep highly talented players, at this point, I just give me the guys and we'll figure the rest out afterwards. That's how I feel.
I mean, and I'm mostly in the same boat. I mean, if Atlanta comes calling and says 1-for-1 swap, let's go. I mean, obviously the answer is yes. You get a younger, better player. makes total sense. And they will still have to get a center. And I have not even heard, does anyone know if John Collins wants to play in Detroit? I mean, that's the other problem is, like Aaron said in his article, you're getting rid of somebody who wants to be with Dwayne Casey, with Troy Weaver, and play for the Pistons. Do we know if John Collins wants to be here? I mean, he's on a playoff team with Atlanta, or at least we thought it was a playoff team with Atlanta, and he doesn't want to be there. You know, he is playing second fiddle to a point guard. He will be doing that in the near future with Cade Cunningham. So, I mean, obviously you make that sort of deal if that's available and on the table. It just seems like the Hawks could package, you know, something else, that first round pick that they got for Cam Reddish, that protected first round pick, and something else, expiring salary, and go get somebody bigger and better than, you know, than Jeremy Grant. But I guess we'll have to see. I mean, the Hawks should be one of those teams scouring. They are not very good this year. They have a lot of problems. And after being in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, I would imagine that Travis Schlenk is lighting a fire even hotter underneath him to try to get this team back to being competitive. And they have played better of late. How does John Collins compare to like, would you rather have the first round pick from the Knicks? Would you rather have like Onyeka Okongwu or DeAndre Hunter and like Danilo Gallinari to fill salary? Like, is that more enticing because you get an additional first round pick that you get to play around with, or would rather just have John Collins?
I think for me, if you're getting Hunter and Okongwu, I could see the merit behind that. But Collins is a proven guy. He's locked up for $25 million for the next 4 years after this season. And he's only 24 years old. Like, you're getting a guy that's going to be playing in his prime for $25 million a year, which is probably right around maybe a little bit less than Jeremy Grant will make on his next contract. I mean, it's probably pretty close, those whatever Grant ends up signing for, whether he signs an extension with the Pistons this offseason or next year when he's an unrestricted free agent, whoever he signs with, I'm sure that number's going to be pretty close. But you're talking about a guy that's still very, very young, has played 3-4 years in a row of pretty solid basketball, and he is a fit with this team. You know what he can do with a guy like Cade Cunningham, how he fits in an offense at the NBA level. He's been pretty healthy. Like, this is a guy that is intriguing to me more so than taking a swing on. I know you didn't say Patrick Williams and the Bulls a moment ago, but that's getting a proven guy is a lot more enticing to me than taking a swing on someone like Patrick Williams, who's hurt for the rest of the season. And you don't know exactly what he's going to end up being. But if you can get Okongwu and Hunter, two guys that personally I feel have a bright future in this league. I'm very, very high on DeAndre Hunter on the wing. And a lot of people really, really like Okongwu. They like his length. They like his defensive abilities. He seems like a guy that could be a rim runner in the pick and roll. Then there's also merit behind that as well. But I think, you know, gun to the head, have to make the decision. I think right now I would take John Collins.
He has been better than Clint Capela this year. Okongwu, from everything that I've seen, he has played better than Capela has this year. He's been more consistent.
You know who else he's been better than, Mike? He's also been better than Isaiah Stewart. So for me, that would make
on the floor.
Oh, I know, man. Hey, he went 8-for-8 from the floor the other night. Cut him a little slack. I'll give him some credit where it's due. He was good offensively against the Kings as well. So.
He was, yes, absolutely. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to answer your question as well. I think I'm also with you, Aaron. I'll take the guy who's proven, who's still only 24 years old. He's not some grizzled veteran. John Collins is one of the most dangerous offensive options at the power forward position in the entire NBA. He is a matchup nightmare. I'm taking that guy. I know he's got his issues. I know there's a lot of upside with Okongwu and Hunter. I'll take the dude who still has more upside to go and has already proven that he's basically a borderline, you know, all-star type player that would also help out both Cade Cunningham, and a guy who's now coming off of the bench for you, Killian Hayes. So,
well, that is a plus segue.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to hit on one more thing. In regards to the trade talk about Grant, what does the team do or look like if they don't trade him? Is he just going to be trade bait in the offseason then?
I mean, I think the Pistons are going to keep their options open, as they should. You know, if they don't trade Jeremy Grant by the February 10th, then yeah, he's a guy that comes back. You see how he does the rest of the year with a healthier team. You know, how does he fit in with guys that are going to be on the roster moving forward? Cade Cunningham, Sadiq Bey, you have Kelly Olynyk locked up for the next few years. Frank Jackson looks like a guy that really just kind of fits in a lineup that needs shooters around Cade Cunningham. Now, how does he fit with those players? I think there is a fit there. I've maintained that I think there is a fit, but he's still going to be a guy that you can dangle as trade bait. A team that doesn't make the move now may get desperate enough in the offseason after falling just short in Game 7 of the, you know, a playoff round. Or at the same time, you can look to re-sign him. You know, he's eligible for the 4-year, $112 million extension. The Pistons need talent. They do not have enough talent. Ask anyone, they will tell you. Troy Weaver will tell you, we do not have enough talent on this team. There is one guy that you know for sure you can build a winning team with, and that's Cade Cunningham. Outside of that, you don't know if you have a single other piece that you know is going to be on the next Detroit Pistons playoff team. They need talent. Jeremy Grant is right up there in regard with Cade Cunningham as the two most talented guys on the roster. I'm not opposed to keeping him moving forward. And I think the Pistons should be building their roster, you know, SO, best player available in the draft. Whether you get the first pick and you can draft Jabari Smith, or you slide outside the top three and you're looking at, you know, maybe somewhat of a guard. Maybe you're looking at Jaden Ivey. Maybe you're looking at a center even. Like, draft the best player available. Figure out the fit later. Look what Cleveland is doing. I mean, Mike can be in a
just about to that. Say, yep,
you best can have player two available. Big forwards, you know, Lauri Markkanen and Evan Mobley. That has worked well for Cleveland. So why can't Detroit do that? I mean, Grant has played the three throughout his, you know, throughout his NBA career. Jabari Smith is 6'10". He's, you know, athletic. I am sure he could play the three as well at the NBA level. Like, positions don't matter. It's being athletic. It's being able to build the right offensive system. The size just doesn't really matter all that much to me. So if you're going to say, look, well, if you keep Jeremy Grant, then, you know, who do you draft? You can't draft Paolo. You can't draft Jabari Smith. Those are two power forwards. It just doesn't work like that anymore. The NBA is so positionless. It just doesn't matter. I think the Pistons can still absolutely take whoever they want in the draft, whether it be one of those top guys or they get pushed out of the top five or top three and, you know, don't have a chance at one of those, I guess, what everyone is considering power forwards. It's still, you got to accumulate talent. Jeremy Grant is talent. And I don't see why the Pistons would feel a need to move on from Jeremy Grant, whether they get the first pick, whether they get the fifth pick. He's a guy that should be on this team unless, you know, some type of trade like a Johns Collins trade presents itself.
Yeah, well said, Aaron. And you know what? I think that comparison to the Cavaliers, especially when it comes to when we're talking about something like a potential John Collins trade, think about the Jarrett Allen trade. Think about the Lauri Markkanen signing in the offseason. It doesn't really matter. It just get the talent on the team, figure the rest out later. And that is absolutely, you're correct, what the Pistons should be doing. So look, if they're not going to get more talent back for Jeremy Grant than they feel Jeremy Grant is as an individual talent, then don't make the trade. And that's really all I have to say about that at this point.
Well, we can go ahead and move on. We have talked a lot about Grant, and this is not going to be the last time that we talk about him either. There's still quite a bit of time, unfortunately, until the NBA trading deadline. It feels like it's tomorrow with how much talk has happened, but we still have a couple of weeks left. But let's go ahead and move on to our second topic, which is the current running mate next to Cade Cunningham, and that's Killian Hayes.
Wow. Not so current anymore, Mike.
Not right. He injured his hip again. He's coming off the bench, backing up Corey Joseph. did not have very encouraging shooting splits starting out in 2022, 36% from the floor, 26% from deep in January, 37%, marginally better in both categories for the month. Aaron, I think here in the notes you have February, did you mean December or January?
Yeah, sorry.
Possibly.
My brain is like, fried.
No.
I was like, Aaron, holy crap.
Is this my
Aaron's already been trying?
I'm looking ahead.
Yeah, he is. Aaron's using his powers of deduction to figure out that Killian Hayes is going to continue to not shoot well. And you know what, Mike? It's been even more exacerbated by the fact that both of Rodney Magruder and Corey Joseph have been absolute flamethrowers from the field over the last couple of weeks. I'm pretty sure Corey Joseph is shooting something like 53% from three-point land over his last 8-9 games, something like that. So it's
and
not
Rodney
just
Magruder
that
wants to get traded for real this time.
Yeah,
I'm actually being traded. Get me out of here.
Rodney Magruder plus a second round pick is no longer a joke trade. It's a real trade. That's
he's
what we're getting
go for
John
37.
Collins. That's right.
He's going to go for 37 tonight against the Nuggets and be like, well, shouldn't have sent over a broken bowl. And maybe I could be playing in that lovely Denver blue. So poor shooting in December and January. Is it time for the Pistons to look at finding a replacement for Killian Hayes as a building piece? And I can go ahead and I will start this. They are going to find a replacement in the form of hopefully Chet Holmgren, Paolo Banchero, or Jabari Smith, and just out with the old, in with the new. That's probably how you're going to replace it. I don't know who the best player you could trade for Kate Cunningham, or I'm sorry, for Killian Hayes would be. Injured, can't shoot, plays very good defense, can pass the ball. You put here for the topic, is this the end of the Killian Hayes experiment? And that's an interesting way of putting it. Jasper, what do you think? Just knowing he's hurt again, knowing the shooting has not come around, is the curtain call starting to come?
I mean, it has to at this point, because I know he still has not even played 82 full games. I understand that, but we're getting to the point right now where, I mean, he's not even shooting 40% from 2-point range. He's barely shooting 30% from 3-point range. You saw him against the Nuggets turn down multiple open layups. It was really frustrating to see. And of course, I will give him some credit. He mixed that in with some good play as well. But as of right now, I cannot see really the justification for him being anything more than a guy you go into next year saying, hey, this is our point guard off the bench. And maybe you trade Corey Joseph at the trade deadline this year. He's certainly playing himself into a position to be a guy who's traded. He's playing too well, kind of not to. It's sort of the DeLon Wright deal from last year where, you know, he's your best point guard, but you kind of have to trade him because he's playing beyond what he really is. So I do think that, unfortunately, the time for Killian Hayes in Detroit as the starting point guard is most likely coming to a close, at least in the short term. What has to happen is you have to start looking for that replacement because you can't depend on him right now. And he hasn't shown you enough by the halfway point of this season to really justify continuing to give him the reins. I want the best for Killian. I still think that there is a good NBA player in there. I just think that it's kind of the same thing we were saying with that John Collins situation. The Pistons are at the point where they just need talent. And talented as he may be, he doesn't have the output right now. And boy, when you look at his stats next to Tyrese Halliburton's, that just, it hurts. It hurts to look at because, man, that would be a really, really nice pairing with Kate Cunningham, that backcourt of him and Halliburton. So I think, yes, to answer your question, I think we are coming to the end of the Killian Hayes as the starting point guard experiment in Detroit. I don't think it's over for him, but yeah, the ice is getting thin, the water's getting warm, so you might as well swim. That's smash mouth, fellas. That's kind of how I feel about it.
I'm not going to be the last one, you know, manning the ship on the Killian Hayes believer group. You know, I say it every time we talk about him, but I have to own up to it. You know, this was a guy that I thought could have been the number one pick in the draft in 2020. I was so incredibly high on him. You know, I liked him. I thought the Pistons should have taken him, and he just hasn't panned out. And Jasper's right. He hasn't played 82 games. You know, he hasn't gotten a full season. I get it. But at the same time, you know, he's gotten hurt multiple times. The shooting numbers are atrocious. And the fit just it isn't working out. You know, Killian Hayes might go to another NBA team and figure it out, but he just doesn't play at the speed, at the pace, with the confidence of a starting guard in the NBA. I just don't think it benefits Detroit to continue to pigeonhole the starting group with Killian Hayes. It's obviously not working. I think you need to start looking both now and for the future at options to pair alongside Cade Cunningham. And I've talked about the current roster. I think the most obvious option is Frank Jackson, who's now back for Detroit. That's a guy that's just out there to space the floor. You know, he's not the biggest guard out there, but he defends, you know, at least acceptable for his position. But more importantly, offensively, he's a guy that's going to draw gravity from the defense. And if the defense decides they're going to double Cade, that's a guy that's going to hit 40% of those open looks that he generates. You know, and Killian Hayes isn't going to do that. He's a guy that is shooting 28%, 27% from the 3-point line. And it's just not acceptable. Everyone's been waiting for him to come around in terms of attacking the basket, doing it with confidence, just overall playing the game with a more aggressive style. And it just hasn't happened. You'll get the flashes once a night or so, but that's just not good enough. At some point there has to be a line drawn. And I think it doesn't benefit the Pistons. He's had the opportunity. The Pistons have tried different things. Maybe going to the bench will help him. Maybe that's for some reason going to be a confidence booster. You know, I don't know if internally Detroit has talked about sending him down to the G League. I don't know, you know, if that would benefit him, but it has worked for players in the past. Killian Hayes is still young, so, you know, he's only in year two. He hasn't played a full 82 games, so maybe going down to the G League would be beneficial for him for, you know, a week or two where he's forced to look, Killian, we need you shooting 12 shots a game, 15 shots a game while you're down there. And I don't know. I don't know what the answer is in that regard, why he isn't a more aggressive player. I get it's difficult finding your footing in the league. It takes time, especially for point guards. But I just don't know if we've seen enough flashes to continue to stay aboard the ship and believe that something's going to click eventually. Unfortunately, the injuries have been another issue in itself. So I think Detroit has to be looking for different options. I think Cade Cunningham has shown he's comfortable playing the point guard spot. The Pistons can go for a guy that can still handle the basketball, can take a few possessions away from Cade Cunningham, but is more so of a scorer, a secondary playmaker, but a guy that can shoot and score when Cunningham is drawing more attention from the defense and has to defer a little bit. You think of someone, not exactly Bradley Beal, you know, the Pistons just aren't going to make a move like that, but someone like that, who's a scoring minded guard. And that's just the exact opposite of what Killian Hayes is at this point. Maybe he works out for a different team, but at this point, it just doesn't look like it's going to be with the Pistons.
I still have not given up hope on him here with the Pistons. And you know what? I thought I liked that they put that three guard lineup of him, Cade, and Corey Joseph out there at the end of the game against the Nuggets. I actually thought that was a good move from Dwayne Casey. So I do disagree a little bit with you there, Aaron. I don't think it's over for him in Detroit. I do still think that there is the possibility there. I don't hate what you're saying about sending him down to the G League. You know, I've seen the argument Killian Hayes needs to be playing against other NBA players so he can be at that NBA speed, so he can know what it's like to succeed against NBA players. But there is something to be said about just forcing him to go down and just shoot. He just needs to shoot at a certain point. And if going down to the G League is what's going to get him that little bit of confidence in his offense, in his shot, then maybe that is the move. I don't know. I don't really know at this point. I just really know that I'm not in the position or of the desire to defend him like as voraciously as I have before. I've seen enough at this point to say, I know what is there. I know there is talent there. I do see a good NBA player in his skill set. It's just not there right now. And until he shows it, there's nothing else I can do.
We have talked about this ad nauseum throughout the year, throughout last year too. Just the fear, the seemingly impossible fear of shooting. And namely, when he gets to the rim, mm-hmm. just the inability to decide what to do. I mean, it seems like it goes from bricking layups to like making a last minute decision to pass when he really shouldn't. And I like the idea of going into the G League and getting some time to just shoot, you know, go in, know that you're the alpha dog and just shoot. He's the 7th overall pick. You know, Aaron, you had said that you thought he could be the 1st overall pick, and you would not be alone. There were some very prominent NBA writers, some national writers who felt the same way, that thought that the Pistons were getting an absolute steal in Killian Hayes. The size, the defense, playing in a semi-professional/professional, you know, league in France. You are not alone in thinking that, but it has not worked. And I do wonder if that initial hip injury sort of made him more hesitant while he was coming back. And that has sort of given him like the yips almost to be more aggressive. But I'm not willing to jump ship immediately, and I think the first step was to send him to the bench, put him behind Corey Joseph and let him run the second unit. And, you know, we'll just have to see how that resonates. And, you know, if they can find him some time in the G League, just prioritize offense, then I'm all for that too. But finding a replacement for Killian Hayes, I mean, it's difficult because you're going to get a top 4 pick next summer, which can't come fast enough as it's like 14 degrees outside. So please, let's hurry up summer. I mean, they have Mike, a lot of guards.
But Mike, they also have so much cap space available. Like it's too soon to start figuring out how they're going to replace him, what they're going to do there. You need to see where they're going to fall in the draft. You need to see who's going to re-sign in free agency. Like, I'm not at the point where I'm looking for Killian Hayes replacements because I just don't think that we have enough information to really figure it out.
I mean, I guess there's two ways that you could think of that question. You could think about it in replacing him in terms of a roster spot and replace him in terms of the piece of the rebuilding puzzle. Roster spot, whatever. You can find another point guard. You know, at this rate, Kyrie Irving will be a free agent because he's slowly driving James Harden out of Brooklyn. So, I mean, there won't be any shortage of point guards. The Kyrie Irving thing was a joke, so we'll just move on. So in terms of replacing him as a fit in the rebuilding puzzle, that I get. And unfortunately, I think you're going to be doing that with your draft pick. I mean, I guess unless you trade Grant for a Patrick Williams, Okongwu, DeAndre Hunter type deal, that would be, you know, a little bit closer to replacing him in terms of the key piece of the rebuild. But finding a replacement for him on the roster, yeah, they'll have the cap space to go out and get a point guard or go and get somebody. I mean, heck, I mean, Corey Joseph's doing it now, you know, as far as just a roster spot goes.
No, but that's what I mean. You can't go into next year with Corey Joseph as your starting.
Oh, no.
You know what I mean?
No.
Like they, and maybe it is Jaden Ivey. I don't think really you can figure it out until you see where you land in the draft, just because the way that the lottery works right now, you know, if you have the third worst record in the NBA, you might not even be drafting in the top 5. So
yeah, you can sign Colin Sexton then.
Exactly. There's a lot of things. So there's a lot of things in place and there's a lot of things that are going to move around. But I think it is very important to note that yeah, as of right now, you're not getting what you need from Killian Hayes, and that needs to change. If you just can't be getting that kind of lack of production from your off guard, regardless.
Right. Yeah, it's just not possible in today's NBA. Good stuff, guys, on the Killian Hayes end of things, and it won't be the unfortunately won't be the end of that discussion either. I'm sure that in 1 month we'll be talking about Jeremy Grant and or Killian Hayes in some capacity.
Yeah, I'm sure again. We will.
One, if not both of those topics will probably be on the February edition, which Aaron might already know if you know, because he's already been through February and back, mm-hmm. and Killian Hayes is still shooting poorly.
I can't say what happens, guys. Don't ask. Stop asking. I'm already getting messages. I can't say what happens.
Aaron, do I cover tonight? Oh, Swami, tell me, is it so?
The time-space continuum demanded that I keep my mouth shut, so I'm going to listen to them. I don't want to, you know, break anything up.
It's like a Back to the Future sports almanac kind of yeah. problem we've got going on here.
Here's Biff. Mm-hmm. Here's Biff. Oh, that's probably why he wrote the Jeremy Grant doesn't get traded thing. He already knows this is like his warning shot to the NBA community, and no one's taking it seriously enough. So guys, let's go ahead and move on to some more general NBA stuff as we wrap up the podcast here. We do have the NBA All-Star game coming up very soon. I was shocked at how fast we're getting through January. Thank God. As well as, you know, of course, everyone's favorite topics. It's not my favorite topic, but I know it's a very popular topic. The races for a lot of the end of season awards, like the MVP, like the Rookie of the Year, sort of deal. So let's just do a little bit of quick talk about some of the more general NBA things happening. All-star voting. I remember one of the first podcasts Aaron and I did, we were talking about Zaza Pachulia being in the all-star game because he got his entire home country to vote. And I thought this is the end of NBA all-star game voting. As we know it, Zaza was like ahead of like DeMarcus Cousins at the time. It was like something stupid. Yeah.
Us from the early 2000s, we like to call that a Yao Ming. Remember how Yao the most, yes. Every single year, had the most votes by the widest margin possible because he had the entire country of China voting for him.
right. Like he gets an unfair home field advantage. That's the difference is Yao Ming was actually really good and Zaza Pachulia wasn't. It was like one of these things is not like the other. One of these things is a backup center for the Warriors. So what do you guys like about, do you like anything about the All-Star voting process? Because it just, to me, it just clogs up the Twitter timeline.
Absolutely not.
Just incredibly. Oh,
I hate it. No, it's the worst. Just let the league or the coaches pick it. They're going to pick the best players. Like the fan, I get the fan vote. Oh, you want to include the fans. Well, that's what happens when you include the fans. You get Zaza Pachulia, you get Derrick Rose. Like, you guys have no business being in this discussion, taking up, the top 10 spots in NBA votes, all-star votes. Like, it makes no sense. Just let the league or the coaches figure it out. The fans suck at it.
Aaron, you don't think Derrick Rose should have 150,000 more fan votes than Darius Garland or Jaylen Brown? That, I don't know about that, man.
Derrick Rose has been out for like the last month and a half, hasn't he?
Yeah.
No, it's ridiculous. It sucks. I don't care about it. I'm just being honest. I don't really care. For me, it's the all NBA voting that really matters far, far more. But when it comes to the MVP, for me, it's a little too soon to decide on the MVP. But look, I'm willing to say right now, if they stay healthy, Rookie of the Year is coming down to either Cade Cunningham or Evan Mobley. And the tiebreaker might come down to Mobley having just a better team around him. But I feel very, very confident in saying that those are going to be the two players that are there at the end of the year for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, moving on to that, I mean, I'll kind of just, I guess, jump on the bandwagon there with Jasper. I think right now, if I was picking the Rookie of the Year, it's probably Evan Mobley. I think, it's not an award that winning matters the most on, but I think it certainly helps. I mean, Cleveland's fifth in the Eastern Conference. They're playing great basketball, and Evan Mobley's been a large part of that. You know, Cade Cunningham has had a really good season, and you know, by the end of the year, if he's continuing to get better and better as he has over the last few weeks, then you know, maybe he does end up catching Evan Mobley. But I think it's a two-man race right now. Some of the guys that are on the outside looking in, Scotty Barnes, Josh Giddey, Franz Wagner, you know,
Franz ain't that far behind.
No, Franz has been stellar. Franz has been really stellar. But I think when it comes down to it, it's really right now down to Mobley and Cunningham. It would take a pretty large search from one of those other guys to find their name in the mix. But both have been phenomenal, and I think this draft class is spectacular. But it's down to those two, which is funny considering the makeup of our panel on this podcast.
And, you know, Evan Mobley has played maybe his least impactful basketball over the last few weeks. I mean, came out of the gate like a rocket. And he has sort of cooled off, so to speak, which isn't saying a whole lot because his numbers are still very good for a rookie, especially defensive numbers. I mean, they're just crazy. They overall, I mean, the Cavs are, if we're talking about most surprising teams in the NBA, where do the Cavs rank?
One. Very, very surprising. They're number one. Yeah.
I was going to say either them or the Hawks for opposite reasons.
Right.
Seriously.
Yeah. And, you know, that is what I think is going to push them over the edge is if they do make the playoffs, which, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they went on a 10-game losing streak because the offense has just been stuck in the mud since Ricky Rubio tore his ACL. But, yeah, if they make the playoffs and Evan Mobley continues to put up numbers that he is putting up now, maybe he's not, you know, going off on the offensive end. But if he continues to do this, it'll be tough to beat. Cade Cunningham has been awesome. Franz Wagner, I think, is third. He's been awesome from a fantasy basketball perspective. He's been easily my best pick in fantasy basketball. I mean, I actually may have picked him up off of the waiver wire when he was like 4% owned. And he's like the 10th best small forward, 10th best forward in ESPN's fantasy basketball. I mean, he's been very good all year. Michigan man, of course. So there we can go full circle back to Michigan basketball.
That's right. Him and his brother tearing it up down in the Magic Kingdom.
I mean, that's a joke, but it's not a joke because no. Mo Wagner's also been pretty good.
It's true. It's true. But yeah, no, that's how I see it. When it comes to the you know, the All-Star game stuff, however, the fan voting's a joke. And I think we are all quite confident there will be no Pistons taking part in that. I am interested to see how the Rising Stars Challenge, the Pistons should at very least have Cade Cunningham and Sadiq Bey. Maybe Isaiah Stewart sneaks his way onto to one of those rosters. Maybe not. But that'll be nice, too, to see a couple Pistons players at least involved in All-Star Weekend in some capacity.
Yeah, absolutely. Normally, for us fans of bad teams, All-Star Weekend is just kind of like multiple slaps in the face. But, you know, some interesting young talent on both of our teams here. And it is always exciting. It's still exciting. And it's especially exciting for me because it's really only 50 minutes down the road. I mean, it's really not far at all. So, and now working in the city of Cleveland, you know, I'm even closer to it, shockingly enough. So it'll be fun. You talk about MVP just a little bit. We can wrap up with MVP there. But so I agree it's too early to really talk about MVP. I mean, I think everyone had like Steph Curry locked up for the first couple, you know, months of the season, and now he's cooled off like immensely. So Nikola Jokic continues to be otherworldly as the only real like star left for the Nuggets as everybody else has been hurt. So I think you have to include him, and people will keep throwing LeBron's name out there, even though the Lakers are pedestrian at best. And the Lakers are probably the third most, well, maybe they're not the third most surprising team this year. I think pretty much all of us had Russell Westbrook to the Lakers for all of the good quality ancillary players on the roster as probably a bad move. Aaron, any thoughts on the MVP? And it's like super early to even talk about this. There's so much parity now, but anything that you've noticed?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously Steph had a phenomenal start to the year, but he's in a major, major shooting slump. That's definitely going to hurt him. But there's so much time left that with Golden State being at where they are at the top of the conference, if he picks it up, like it could very much end up being Steph Curry. Yeah, I know people are talking about Jokic. People are talking about Giannis. Like, and certainly they deserve to be in that race. Jokic is absolutely phenomenal. He's one of my favorite players in the league to watch. What he does is just incredible. But I think this is setting up for a late season push from Stephen Curry, and people are going to look at the Warriors being atop the West. And if Steph Curry's helping lead that charge, I think he's going to get a lot of recognition. Joel Embiid, hate to say it, but he's been phenomenal as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yep. He's in there as well.
That was the name I was going to bring up, Aaron. I think that he's being under-talked about right now. But if he's going to do Joel Embiid things, because that's why he didn't win it last year. It's because he didn't, you know, play. He did Joel Embiid. He takes time off. That's what it is. He has for a long time now. But if he plays essentially a whole season and he's putting up these kinds of numbers, I mean, he is on a heater, my boy. He is going off 30-plus points. You know, 12 plus rebounds every single night. He's just killing teams right now. So it's going to be fun. I definitely think, Steph, Giannis always has to be in that conversation. Jokic and Embiid, maybe LeBron works his way back into that conversation as well. But for me, those are the four guys that I really look at right now as being the ones with the greatest chance of being there at the end of the season.
Yep, the top players in the league are all like going after the top award. It's pretty crazy, isn't it? It's no one saw that one coming.
Oh, we forgot Kevin Durant.
I know, but you know, I kind of worry about what the injury is going to do to his chance. I mean, he's going to have to go off when he comes back, and maybe he does. You know, the NBA is very much a "what have you done for me lately" type of league. So you know, maybe he comes back and goes like supersonic for several weeks and that's all it takes. I mean, it's entirely possible. And the Nets start flying up the, you know, up the standings. So it's entirely possible. Yep. We list off every other player and forgot about arguably the best player in the whole league. It's wild.
It's one really of those wild. Kind of seasons.
It is one of those, kind of seasons. Yep. All right, guys, good podcast. We've covered a lot. Jeremy Grant, we'll have to keep tabs on all of the comings and goings for the deadline, including, of course, Jeremy Grant. And we covered Killian Hayes as well, some of his shooting woes. And, you know, is he now a expendable piece / not part of the next great Pistons playoff team? We talked about that as well. And we encourage all of our listeners, please visit our website as well. We have a lot of written content. Aaron wrote a very good article justifying why keeping Jeremy Grant is a viable, not only viable, but, you know, potentially the right choice. I mean, there's just no way of saying that the Hawks or Bulls or any of these teams are going to just hand over high end picks or, you know, top end players just willy nilly. So he wrote a very good article about that as well. So we definitely encourage you to go and check out our written content on our website as well. Fellas, any other thoughts before we close out here?
No, I'm ready to go. I mean, good pod, guys. Glad to be with you. And we'll see what happens. Trade deadline's going to be fun. But at the end of the day, you know, it's not what happens at the trade deadline. It's who you get to spend the trade deadline with. And I wouldn't pick anyone but you two.
It turned into a Hallmark card.
Oh, I have to go, guys. My room just got dusty. Someone's cutting onions in here.
Yeah, someone's cutting onions right in front of my face. Thank you, Aaron.
Oh, man.
Well, we'll see. After Jeremy Grant is traded for a basket of apples, we'll see if you still feel so nice about it. But thank you also, our sponsor, BetOnline, of course, been a consistent partner for us. And once again, head on over to the new mobile website or updated desktop, sign up today. You get your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with the promo code BLEAV50. That's BLEAV 50 at BetOnline. Fellas, good talking. We'll talk again next week as well. For my co-hosts, Aaron Johnson and Jasper Apollonia, I am Mike Angelano. Thank you so much for joining us on this edition of the Palace of Pistons podcast, part of the Believe Podcast Network. And we will see you all next time.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.